The best way to pay debts when you're behind is with a plan. The proverb says, the mind of man plans his ways, but the Lord directs his steps. Planning is wisdom. So ignoring it, throwing it all in a pile somewhere, if your bills look like me scattering these across here, then you're disorganized. No wonder you got a problem. Get organized, develop a plan, take control of what you can take control of if you're behind on your bills. And we'll walk you through how to deal with the collectors as you do that. Now you got to remember, when you're dealing with a collector, this is not your friend. Sometimes one of the techniques they use is the friend technique. They want to be friendly, and they're not your friend. They have one purpose for talking or dealing with you. One purpose: get money. That's their whole purpose. They don't care about any other part of your life. This is not your counselor. This is not your pastor. This is not your mama. They want your money. Don't be naive. And they play all these games. They want to hear your whole story and all this. Every bit of this is a technique. This is a big, big industry and a sophisticated industry, and you have to have a clue when you deal with them. Don't be intimidated by these people. Collectors are basically trained salespeople and telemarketers. That's all they are. They average about 20 calls an hour. That's the norm. They contact out of 20 calls about 6 debtors, and they'll usually get about 2 promises. They run about a 10% promise ratio, and out of those 2 promises, I have no idea how many of them are fulfilled, but I bet most of them aren't. Smart Money Magazine says the collections industry, in terms of revenues produced by fees paid to collectors, is now over $40 billion a year. This is a big, big business. And it is a very, again, a very sophisticated business. But the people that are calling you are not very sophisticated. It is a very high turnover, low paid position. You're dealing with an idiot in a cubicle 500 miles away with a headset on that has not been on the job very long. A recent article in Business Week said that 85% of the collectors are gone in a year. There's an 85% turnover ratio annually. That means they're not going to be there long. When you call back and they say George isn't here anymore, they mean it. George isn't there anymore. That's one thing that's not a technique. He is gone. He left. Why? Because I'd rather do just about anything than this job, wouldn't you? I mean, really, you'd just about go anywhere else than do this. It is not an honorable profession. It's out of control. So if you're running a collections outfit, really what you're running is a bunch of mean telemarketers that aren't going to be there long. What you do is hire and train full-time to replace the fallout because the attrition level is so high. The front door is a revolving door. They run in and run back out all the time. And that's who you're talking to. This is someone who couldn't get a decent job. And so don't act like that this is somebody that's like if I loaned you money and it was you and me, or you loaned me money and I didn't pay you. Now that'd be personal. And if you were angry, it would mean something. But this is an idiot in a cubicle 500 miles away with a headset on. Keep this in mind when you're dealing with them, because they start to have this presence in our lives. Big, round, one single eye in the center of the forehead. And it's just these monsters are out there. And these monsters are maybe about this tall, sitting in a little chair, spinning around like the movie Office Space. I mean, there's just nothing there. You have to take the teeth out of these monsters and deal with this properly in order to do things. Now, because there's such high turnover, they're not very well trained. They get a couple of training classes, and they're taught basically one big technique, several little feeder techniques off the one central core technique. The core technique is they're taught to evoke strong emotion. If they can get you on the phone and change your pulse rate, they got you. That means that they made you afraid. They made you angry, or any other emotion that is a strong emotion that you want to name. Usually those are the two big ones, fear and anger. And they're best friends, aren't they? Because right about the time I get afraid, I usually get a little angry. And that works together, doesn't it? They are really good at pushing your buttons. They'll use all kinds of techniques. One of the techniques is the pull the rug technique. The pull the rug technique is this. You step up on the rug, they pull the rug out, right? Now, the way that works verbally is they call up and they say, George, you're behind with us, and we can't believe it. Now, tell me, what's going on? And George says, well, you know, the kids have been sick. I've been laid off. We had a car wreck. My wife is in the bed in traction. And he starts telling the whole story of why they're behind on their bills. And about three or four sentences, five sentences into it, the guy yells into the phone, "I don't care what's going on in your life. Don't you know you owe this money? When are you going to pay this bill?" And you go, "Wait a minute, I was just..." And it gives you mental whiplash, doesn't it? And what happens is people get mad. It makes you mad. It step up on the rug, pull the rug, and you go, "He was just asking," and then I answered, and then he started yelling at me, and it makes you mad because he didn't care about your situation after he acted like he cared. It's a verbal barrage. It's psychological warfare. It is a technique, and these guys are really good at their techniques. They're so good at it that they really create all kinds of problems. I was doing a live event one time in Phoenix, Arizona, and this beautiful lady came up front, and she said, "Thank you so much for teaching this lesson." I was teaching this lesson there. And I said, "Why? What's going on?" And she said, "Well, I'm current on everything, but I haven't eaten in 2 days. Because my dad told me, no matter what, I always protect my credit bureau report, that it meant everything." And I went, "You haven't eaten in 2 days? I'm afraid of those collectors. They call and yell." "Yeah, but you haven't eaten in 2 days?" She said, "I will now." See, they use all kinds of techniques. Now, there is a spectrum of collectors. Let me be very, very clear, because sometimes I get criticized and legitimately for not detailing this out enough, and I want to make sure I do. There's a spectrum of collectors from really professional good ones to just scum burgers, okay? And it works kind of like this. The best people in collections that we work with, the classiest, that know their stuff, that do not violate the law, that walk through the process, are people collecting on your first mortgages. You get behind on your first mortgage, they're going to call you, and when they call you, if they say they're going to shoot you, duck, the bullet's coming. If they say something, they mean it, and they don't bluff, they don't fool around, and we're going to move you into foreclosure, they're going to put pressure on you, they'll be firm, sometimes they'll be a little mean, but they are very professional at their business, and the turnover rate with mortgage collections is not nearly as high as it is in other things. The next best collector is usually your small town local collection agency. It's owned by someone in your town and they're collecting bills for local merchants in the area. And again, they're usually more professional and they're your neighbors. So they know they're going to see you somewhere. And they may get hit when they do if they don't behave. I mean, so, you know, there's a process. But I've dealt with a lot of those men and women that operate those things, and they're very good to follow the law, the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. They don't violate federal law very often. But then you move along, and it starts getting worse fast, okay? And you can really get in some disastrous situations where you deal with, like, these little finance companies, these little storefront finance companies. A lot of the people that work in those are basically punks. And you will find that out when they start to collect from you. I had a single mom call me one time crying. She was at the corner market on a payphone that I was counseling. And she said, "I tried to go home, and when I got home, he was sitting there." And I said, "What do you mean he was sitting there?" This bozo was sitting with a folding chair in the front of her driveway so she couldn't pull in the driveway. You know, he's trespassing. Call the police. Tell them you're being threatened physically. This is a punk out of control and violating federal law. The worst of the worst are credit card collectors. Chase, First Card, Bank of America, Discover, Sears, Penny's. I'm saying it on tape, so it must be true. Bad news. These household names, companies that otherwise we generally have some respect for, when you get to their collections department, violate federal law daily. They're completely out of control. They're credit card collectors. You can tell they're lying if their mouth is moving. If you're a credit card collector, you are officially scum. And if you don't like that, come see me. We'll talk about it. You're scum. We work with you every day. You have no clue what you're doing. You're out of control, and you're abusive. You're mean. You're wrong. You're nasty. You're an industry that needs to be completely purged. And we're about the business of doing that as fast as we can. We're going to do it. And they do stuff like they'll change their names. I used to have one when I was going broke that would call me. Her name was Mrs. Baskerville. The Hounds of Baskerville. This is her pseudonym, right? I had another one that called me right after that named Mrs. Savage. And I started laughing. I said, yeah, I just talked to Mrs. Baskerville. You're Miss Savage, or you're her cousin. That's a great pseudonym. Because I just read all these articles on collectors. I started studying it because I was getting my tail kicked and I had to find out what was going on. And I found out that was one of the things they were doing. And she said, no, it's not a pseudonym. That's my real name. Wasn't able to work out a deal with her. Now listen, let me be real clear. I am not, nor have I ever in my career taught someone how to dodge a bill. If you legitimately owe someone, I want to help you get on a plan and pay it. But I don't want someone taking over your life by misbehaving, reprioritizing your life, and you walk up here and hadn't eaten in 3 days. That is wrong. Now, I want to walk you through a process where you can pay the bill and you can be honorable and you can have integrity. I am not going to assist in you dodging someone. That's not what this lesson's about. This lesson is about an industry that's out of control and how to put some shields up, some barriers up, so you can breathe while you work your plan to pay the people you owe. That's what this is about. We're not about dodging it. And the best way to counteract this technique of emotion is to always pay your necessities first. Then you set the order of payment after that. Necessities are food before you buy anything else. If you're working at all, you can buy food. Lights and utilities, keep your heat on. I'm not talking about a $148 cable bill. I'm talking about your water, your electricity, your gas, so you have heat and cooling in your house. Basic telephone service. Not a $92 a month cell phone bill either. That's not what I'm talking about. Basic utilities, necessities. Food, utilities, pay your mortgage payment. Do not pay anyone until you've eaten, kept your lights on, and pay your mortgage payment. You have to have a place to live. Pay your car payment if you've got a car and keep gas in the car. Food, shelter, clothing, transportation, and utilities. Usually if you're in a mess, you've got enough clothing to make it for a little while. You don't have to budget much for clothing. Usually you can hang on to that one. But take care of those things. Because here's the situation. If the lights are on and you've got a roof over your head and your car is running and you don't have to worry about the water being cut off, you emotionally are in a completely different place to fight your way through this. Because you're in the middle of a battle. And if you put those four walls up around you, you've got that emotional guard, and now the rest of it is a Monopoly game that I'm behind on. The rest of it is a game that's real serious, and I want you to clean it up, but it's not nearly as serious as getting your lights cut off or getting evicted from your rental, right? You've got to take care of those kinds of basic things first. It puts you in a place to do that. And yet, about a fourth of the people that come to see our counselors, I told you this in another lesson, have this out of order. They've paid MasterCard and they're behind on their mortgage. Why? Because they paid all the little ones. At least we got all those paid. The one big one's off. We're only behind on one. It's the big one. You'd have been better off to have been behind on all of those. They're not going to be near, they don't have nearly as much traction in your life legally. They're not going to be, the only thing they do is scream. Like a bunch of bees, like you poked a beehive. That's all they do is scream, 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 scream. The big ones will sting you. They will foreclose on you. They will repo your car. They will follow through on that. This other stuff's a bunch of threats in most cases, and we'll talk that through. Now, the Act, the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, was passed also in 1977, dictates how a third-party collector is to deal with you. But subsequent case law has impugned this act upon debt collectors, meaning if you owe Bank of America, they have to abide by this act now because of case law. The original act just said if they hired a third-party collector, it dealt with them. But now that same set of laws has been impugned on creditors doing collections on their behalf. If you own a business and you're collecting, you need to be aware of this act because you don't want to violate it when you're doing collections. One of the things is harassment is illegal, and it restricts a collector to calling between the hours of 8 a.m. and 9 p.m., and that is your time, not where they are. They may be on the West Coast. You may be on the East Coast, and then they want to call and wake you up at 6 o'clock in the morning, or vice versa. They want to call you in the middle of the night, and that's not how the act works. It's your time. They have to go by where you're located, and if they violate that, they're in violation of federal law, and they do violate it every day, so be aware. The act also allows you to demand that a creditor cease calling you at work, and I recommend you do this. This is another area of emotion that you need to get off of you. The embarrassment of being called out in front of your coworkers through your receptionist. You need to get that off of you. You send them a letter. A copy of the letter is in here, and you need to send it certified letter, a certified mail, so you have proof they got it, because they'll act like they didn't, because they lie. send it certified mail, and it says, according to the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, you're no longer allowed to call me at work because I have now notified you that my employer wishes you not to do that. That's simple. And then while you're at work, you can work. And while you're at home, you can talk to them when they call us according to the guidelines I'm going to give you. We're not trying to ignore them. We're not trying to dodge them. We're going to make them abide by the law. It's that simple. The act even allows you to insist by letter that a creditor stop all contact except to notify you of lawsuit proceedings. This is called a cease and desist letter. That letter is also in the back. I do not recommend, let me say it again, I do not recommend you use a cease and desist letter except in extreme situations where you have a collector that has completely gone bananas, is threatening to kill you or something, and they do all this bizarre stuff, then you need to put a cease and desist letter in place. But if you put a cease and desist letter in just because you don't like to be bothered, you will activate stuff in their collection software and you're more likely to get sued is what we're finding. If you keep messing with them the way I'm going to teach you to mess with them and work your plan, allow a certain trickle of communication, and you owe them that, you owe them money within guidelines and within a reasonable amount, you need to communicate with the people you owe money to, but on a reasonable basis. If you'll allow that instead of putting up this cease and desist, you get to continue to work through the thing. If you throw that cease and desist up, it'll activate some of the algorithms in some of the collection software and it'll go straight into the lawsuit dumper, and you might have been able to keep it out of there for a couple of years if you didn't do this. So I recommend against using that. Do not use the cease and desist letter except in horrible situations, because all negotiations stop and you may activate a lawsuit. Now, what you do need to do is this. You need to say, here's the situation. I'm going to have a calm, adult-like discussion with you as long as you don't use inappropriate language, inappropriate tones. If you're going to yell at me, call me names, call my mother names, or threaten me, you're going to talk to a dial tone. I will talk to you once every 2 weeks, no more. If you call more often than that, you will talk to a dial tone. If you talk to me in reasonable tones, I want to communicate with you. I will talk to you once every 2 weeks. And if you want to test me on this, just call right back. Because some of them, we had one lady the other day, had 16 calls before noon from one collector. Now that's harassment. No question about it. That violated the law. And if she takes that one to court, she'll win it. The problem is broke people don't take many people to court. That's the situation. So you've got to just lay down the guidelines. You're going to talk to a dial tone. They call up and start, your mother's a dog. You know, you just have to just teach them a lesson. Do not talk. It's only been 13 days. You're only allowed to talk to me every 14. See ya. And just put it in your database, you idiot, because they database everything. Every call and every reaction is databased, because if they ever find one that works, they hit it over and over and over and over again. If you tell them you're a Christian, they'll start quoting scripture to you. About the wicked don't repay. You ever read that one? You'll hear that. All of a sudden, you got a Bible student on the other end. If you're Southern, you may get a Northern accent, because that may be abrasive to you. If you're Northern, you may get a Southern accent, because that may be abrasive to you. That anything they can figure out that pushes your button, they're going to database it. So you can teach them with their little database how to behave. Once every 2 weeks, no more. I will talk to you then. If you will talk to them that often and you will send them as much mail as they send you, showing them a copy of your budget in the forms I'm getting ready to show you, you can blow, I mean, send, bother them more than they bother you. That's a different way, isn't it? Because they don't know what to do with that one, because everybody ducks them. So once every 2 weeks, and I'm going to send you lots and lots of mail, make you open a lot of stuff and look at it, make my file get really, really thick. Oh, that's the old thick woman file, yeah. No collector may take a bank account or garnishee wages without proper lengthy court action, except the case of a delinquent IRS or student loan. All such threats are a bluff. They'll get you on the phone, the credit card collector, we're going to garnishee your check Friday. You know that check you were supposed to get Friday? You're going to get there. It's not going to be there. You're, what? What? Oh, no. People call me. They're just going bananas. They're not going to garnishee your check. It's a total lie. They can't. They have to sue you. They have to win the lawsuit. They have to wait 30 days and execute on the judgment. And all of that's going to take them months and months and months and months. They're not taking your check Friday. That's a lie. And to threaten to take your check Friday when they know it's a lie is also a violation of federal law, and they do that every day. This is an industry that's out of control. So will they sue you? Someday, if you totally ignore them and never pay them. And they probably should then. I want you to get to them and pay them. That's not the point. But this idea they're going to threaten you into giving them your food money has got to stop. And they'll use the emotion stuff. I remember one time we were going broke. And American Express called my wife. Started yelling at her. And she's a sweet little Southern belle. And she doesn't do conflict. Said, "Ms. Ramsey, I just can't believe you'd stay with a man that wouldn't pay his bills." She called me at the office and she's crying and she's like, he said, "I wouldn't believe he'd stay with a man that wouldn't pay his bills." And I was kind of thinking the same thing. I got so angry. Just exactly what they wanted me to do. I totally fell into the trap. I got so angry, I didn't pay the house payment, and I paid them off. It was $1,100. It was $1,186. I remember it 20 years later. That's how angry I was. It's so stuck into my emotions. It's $1,186. And I owed them two cards. I had that one and another one, a corporate card and a personal card. And they databased that. And 30 days later, the same guy calls up. My wife answers the phone. By now, I'm starting to understand these techniques. And I taught her, I said, "Sharon, this is what's going on. They made me mad, and I fell for it, and they hurt your feelings, and he pushed a button right where he knew you were. They totally won that. We can't let them win." And she said, "All right, that's just," and then she kind of got mad in that Southern Belle kind of way. And he calls up, and he goes, "Miss Ramsey, I can't believe you're still there. I thought you'd be leaving." It worked. Why not push the button again? That's how this works. And she said, "Listen, just don't get your briefs in a bind. We'll pay you later." Now, the IRS and student loans do not have to go through a court action to garnish your wages. The student loan can garnish your wages just by sending, a federally insured student loan, just by sending your employer a letter, and you are garnished right then, just like that. And they do it all the time when you get way, way behind. So if they threaten, that may be a real possibility. IRS, they just appear out of nowhere and take everything. And it's all legal. Go figure. I don't understand. But your plan should include as much prompt repayment as you can, and don't let them use your credit report as a paper club. "We're going to mess up your credit if you don't straighten this up by Thursday." Well, by the time my credit was completely obliterated, because I hadn't paid like 900 different accounts on time, right? The credit report ran from here to the end of the stage. It was all bad, right? This guy calls up and goes, "We're going to ruin your credit." And I went, "Oh, please, don't ruin my credit." No, not the credit. Don't ruin the credit, please. It's just hard to be emotional about it at that point. And besides that, we're talking about a FICO score. If you're going to quit borrowing money, it really doesn't matter much anyway. Now, I don't want you to go destroy your credit. That'd be silly. But don't let them beat you up with that threat either and cause you to give them what would have been your children's food money. It's crazy. If you're unable to pay the minimum payments, use the pro rata plan. The pro rata plan is the next form in the book. Let me walk you through how that works. Again, you may not need this, but you probably do need someone that does. And if you'll give them this system, you will keep them out of a lawsuit until they can work their plan and get their debts paid honorably. And control this collections people. Always have caller ID. Always have call blocker. Always have an answering machine with a memo button where you can record the call. When you learn these steps and you learn these laws, I've got a young man, 19 years old. This happened just the other day. He was just telling me this. 19 years old. His brother owed, I think it was like $1,400 or $1,500 to this credit card company. He was behind with them, and they were calling him like 16 times a day. They were yelling at him. They were calling him in off hours. They were breaking the law six ways, this way, this way, this way, this way, this way. So the phone rings. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. 19-year-old picks up the phone because I'd shown him this stuff, hits the memo button, starts recording, and says, "You are being recorded. It's 5 a.m. in Nashville, Tennessee. And this is what's going on. And you're with so-and-so." Well, the guy on the other end apparently hadn't been trained well, and he just starts into his routine. Starts, "Bah, bah, 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 bah." "Your brother," which is also a violation of privacy, "owes us money. You're not allowed to discuss an account with someone else." And he recorded the whole thing. So he said, "Thank you very much." And he hung up the phone. Picked up the phone, called him right back, said he needed the legal department. Got legal on the line and said, "I want you to hear something." And he played it back. "It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm recording your call in Nashville, Tennessee," and played it back. And legal said, okay, what kind of deal you want? Because he knew he had him. A 19-year-old settled that account with one memo button push, several thousands of dollars for $400. Why? Because he had them, didn't he? They're lucky they didn't have to write him a check. Really. I mean, it was honorable to pay something because the debt was legitimately owed. But they were completely out of control, and a 19-year-old nailed them. So you can too. And you can teach people to take care of themselves. Now, not to abuse and not to duck a bill. We're making that real clear, aren't we? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay, just to not be abused. Now let's go back to Joe and Susie's budget. Joe and Susie have $3,361 coming in this month. When they run their necessities budget, it is $3,161, which leaves them what's called disposable income to pay on their credit cards and other miscellaneous bills, $200. To make it easy for math purposes, we're going to say they have total debt, unsecured, of $2,000, a bunch of little credit cards. The payments on the $2,000, a bunch of little credit cards, adds up to be $310. They only have $200. They don't have $310. Do you understand the problem? We're a little short this month, but we got some of it. Now, we've got two choices. We can either pay some of them and let the others just ride. That's one option. And then you're going to have, those others are going to be continually getting worse and worse and worse, and you're going to make a mess. Instead, we recommend trying this plan. There's no guarantees with it, but at least you're being honorable and you're doing all you can do with what you have. I want you to spend the $200 that you have as fairly as we can. The fairest way I know is pro rata. In other words, what percentage of the $2,000 is a given debt? And they're going to get that percentage of the $200. Now that sounded like a barrel of fish hooks. Let's walk through it. Looking at the actual form, if you look, you'll see Visa, the third one down, we've got MBNA Visa as an example, is owed $200 of the $2,000. They could be paid off for $200. Do you see that? Say yes.
Yes.
So if there's a total debt of $2,000 and they are $200, do you see that they're 10% of the problem? So they're going to get 10% of the money we have to spend, which is $200. 10% of $200 is $20. Now, if MBNA's minimum payment is $32, are they going to be happy with $20? The answer is no. They're still going to scream, you're still behind, you are still dinging up your credit. Are they going to sue you? Technically they can. You're in default on the agreement, but they never will. Because if you send them this sheet with a cover letter saying, this is all I can do, and here's a copy of my overall budget. Everything above that is necessities. Here's all the other people that I owe, so be scared because I'm bankruptcy looking for a place to happen. And here's all the other people that I owe, and here's the story of how we got in the mess, and here's the things we're doing, and stapled to it is a check for $4.62 or for $20 or whatever the pro rata amount is, and you show them how you arrived at that, and you send them that certified mail. They'll cash the check. It does not obligate them to not sue you, but they won't because it messes up their software because they see deposits on the account. There's activity that's positive on the account, and they won't put a bullet in a horse that's limping. That's the way they look at it. That's the way they look at it. They're going to keep you alive as long as they can. They're getting something. You totally stonewall them, ignore them, send them a cease and desist letter, they'll sue your tail, and they probably should. Because you owe them money. So you're going to give them all you can with what you have and give them their fair share. Now, this won't go on for 2 years and you make it. So you need to get the extra job and do the stuff we talked about with Gazelle Intensity to get out of debt. But for several months, 4, 5, 6 months, while you're fighting the bear with a switch, you can walk your way through this and keep them off of you. We have never had a client who does this every single month for less than 6 months. I've never had them in 6 months get sued. Now, if you try to do it for 2 or 3 years, eventually they're going to catch up with you. They're not going to tolerate you just not paying them, right? But you're doing all you can, and it registers in their software, and it registers in the way they process this stuff. They're still going to call you. They're still going to harass you. It doesn't stop any of that. But you can just go, it's not 2 weeks. Pro rata plan. Look at it. You know, and it's in your file. We know you got it because it was certified mail. Every time I send it, I got proof you got it. Now, by the way, the check cleared too. Hello. Never give them electronic access to your checking account, ever. Now, if everything else fails and you do get sued, let's talk about lawsuits. Typically, lawsuits for under $10,000 are sued in something like small claims court or general sessions court. This is an informal proceeding. How many of you have ever been to something like traffic court for getting a ticket? The first time you went, were you kind of like me, you were a little scared, a little bit intimidated, I'm going to court. Ooh. And then after you've been there a couple times, you're like, I'll take the film. The intimidation kind of goes away, doesn't it? You know what I'm saying? Small claims court is about like traffic court. It's not a real formal. It is a judge. It is a proceeding. You don't want to mess with them. You don't want to be dishonorable. You don't want to be a smart aleck in there. You end up in the jail, all right? But go in there with reverence like you should in any courtroom, but it is not some big thing. I mean, Matlock's not going to come strolling in with a jury. You can go in there and just talk to the judge, and he'll talk, and it's like Judge Wapner. You know, we're going to sit here and talk this out, and they'll work with you on things. Before you get sued, you're going to be served by the local sheriff's department and typically given 10 days' notice. That's how lawsuits work in most states. In court, if the debt is valid, you're going to lose if you fight. It doesn't matter. The only question is, do you owe the money? Is this your debt? Yes, yes, judgment. You lose the lawsuit. It's not about whether you're broke. It's not a lawsuit of your character. It's not a, they don't want to hear your story. It's, do you owe the money? Yes. Did you sign for this debt? Yes. Have you paid them? No. Lawsuit, done. You lose. That's judgment rendered, okay? So don't expect to win, but understand how the process works. From that date, you'll have 30 days before the judgment becomes final and garnishments or attachments can begin. So they're not going to scarf your bank account that day. They're not going to garnish you your wages that day. So during that 30 days, you could sit down with that attorney and work out a payment plan. Lots of times. And really, that works pretty good because most of these attorney firms that do these lawsuits, the paralegals run everything, and they're really pretty smart. You're dealing with intelligent life again. And you can really get something going where you couldn't get a collector. I was dealing with a collector one time. Guy hadn't paid him in 5 years. It's an old Citibank card. Hadn't gotten a bill in 5 years. I called him up trying to settle it. He goes, we're going to sue him tomorrow. I said, it's been 5 years. I'm sorry. I don't believe you. You cried wolf, okay? 5 years you're going to sue him. Now you're going to sue him tomorrow. We're going to sue him tomorrow. I said, great, sue him. At least I'll get to talk to Intelligent Life. What's the attorney's name? He didn't know. So apparently he didn't have the lawsuit really prepared, did he? And you just got to kind of walk that through. So again, when the judgment becomes final, it's not the end of the world. You still can work out something and not get garnished or not have them come pick up stuff at your house. There's all kinds of things you can do. If you're not able to reach an agreement, you can even go back into court and file a slow pay motion. And the court in many grand, sometimes in some areas it's called a pauper's oath, where you go and go, I'm going to pay a little bit because that's all I got. And they'll start taking your pro rata plan. A lot of judges will look at that kind of a thing. Now again, there's no legal situation here. I'm giving you the common sense application of a really stressful situation. That's how credit sharks and suits works. Now, a lot of times people get behind and they're offered then the ability to settle a debt. They owe Citibank $2,500 or they owe MBNA $3,000, and they'll call up if there's a $3,000 debt and it's way behind, they hadn't paid it in 6 or 8 or 10 months and they're trashed, and they'll call up and say, well, you owe us $3,000, but if you'll pay us off today, we'll take $1,500 or we'll take $1,700. That's called settling a debt. Here's how you do that if you're going to do that. And you shouldn't do that if you have the money to pay the bill. If you got $20,000 laying in the bank, you should pay the bill you owe. But if you hadn't got any money and you could scratch up $1,500 to settle a $3,000 or $4,000 debt, you should do that. And that would be a good idea. Always get it in writing. I've got an old attorney friend of mine that says, if it's not in writing, it never happened. Get it in writing. Never give them electronic access to your checking account to debit your account for that amount, because they'll clean out everything in there. Try going in to the judge and going, well, we settled and they told me on the phone that they'd take $1,500 and they took $4,000 out of my account. And the judge said, how much you owe them? I owed them $5,000. He said, so you still owe them $1,000. He's not got any sympathy for you. So they will zap your account against your agreement. Do not let them have access to your account under any circumstances. Send them a money order or a cashier's check or something like that. Keep them away from your numbers. Never give them post-dated checks. They will cash them. I know they're not supposed to. It's illegal. But they do it anyway. I've been telling you for an hour. They break federal law on a daily basis. This is an industry that's out of control. So you have to put these barriers up. So if you're going to settle, get it in writing and send them a cashier's check. Keep a copy of that cashier's check and that letter that says, we accept on this account this amount as settled in full. Settled in full. And you keep that piece of paper the rest of your life. Because 15 years from now, you're going to get a call. Or your next door neighbor is going to get a call. And they said, there's some collections guy up in New York hunting you. And you'll go over there and you call him back. Well, I settled that account. Yeah, we'll prove it. Okay, you got the piece of paper. And it's over. But if you don't keep that piece of paper, you'll have to get to paying on it again. So keep up with it, because these people, you can tell they're lying if their mouth is moving. Now, if you're facing foreclosure or repossession, talk to those collectors. Because on most major car notes, like if you've got a car note with one of the big manufacturers, those kinds of things, you get 90 days behind, they're going to hook a record to that thing. You got about 3 months to get that deal worked out. Call them and work out a deal where you can roll one of those old payments in. Get that car sold, something else. Work an extra job, get that one caught up. That's a big one. Foreclosures, the same situation. Very seldom does a foreclosure occur inside of 6 months, like almost never. If it's a mainstream, regular first mortgage, it's going to be 6 months in every single state before they foreclose. Sometimes it's 7 or 8 or 9 months. Sometimes it's even more, depending on the state that you're in. So if you're 2 months behind, we're going to foreclose on you? Probably not. 99% chance not right then. And it's certainly not going to be Friday. Now, if you get a notice that says there's a foreclosure sale at 11 o'clock at the courthouse steps on Friday the 14th, you're getting foreclosed on, okay? That's what this is. They're not kidding. That's what's going to happen. And so get on the phone, work out a payment plan, get caught up, get in touch with one of our counselors, get online for our resources. We'll walk you through this process. We do it all the time, and it's easy enough to do. Now, but by the way, those lawsuit type things we just covered, they almost never happen if you work these steps. If you're working a budget, you take the extra job, you have the garage sale, you sell so much stuff the kids are afraid they're next, you do these things we talk about all the time, and you're working and working and working, and you're communicating once every 2 weeks, and you're sending them more paperwork than they send you, you're not going to get sued. And you're going to work your way through it. It's people that hold their nose, close their eyes and go la 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 and walk off and ignore and go into denial that get sued. And that's when you get your ears nailed. You're just not going. It's not going to work. Now, when it comes to pre-screening options, I want you to opt out of pre-screening. Everyone in here needs this. Listen, go online, go to our website, or go to the credit bureau's website, or pick up the forms in the back of this book and opt out of marketing pre-screens on your credit bureau report. Companies are allowed to search through credit bureau reports, find quality customers, and send them marketing offers. You can block that and keep down the junk mail considerably. If you do it in writing, you can permanently block it. I did that years ago. My junk mail is way down. I get almost no personal junk mail because we blocked Sharon's credit bureau for pre-screening marketing options years ago, and we did it in writing. Learn this stuff for yourself. Learn it for others. Listen, if you're struggling and you're behind, you're hurting, or you know someone that is, or there's someone in your financial peace group that is. I know exactly how you feel. I've been there, done that. I got the t-shirt. Sharon and I were scared. We didn't know what to do. We didn't have any knowledge. And these companies that were misbehaving, and some of them that weren't misbehaving, that just wanted their money, and rightfully so, they just destroyed our lives for a period of time. Just completely took every little bit of emotion or pride or dignity or honor we had away from us for a period of time. Statistics are telling us that 56% of enlisted military personnel are reporting difficulty with their personal finances. That's over half. And so if you're in a neighborhood where there's military people around, or maybe someone's deployed and maybe mom's back home with the kids or dad's back home with the kids and she's deployed, they may be facing these credit situations. That's a chance for you to step in and use some of the stuff we taught you in this lesson to be able to make a difference. So anyone that is being taken advantage of, but certainly those that are protecting you and I, they need to be protected, and you and I can step in and help just a little bit to say, a little bit of a way to say thanks for the service they're giving us, and definitely, we definitely owe them that, don't we? And I want to remind you also that there's a special military lesson for those of you that are in the military that we've shot just for the military. So while you're going through Financial Peace University, don't forget to look that up if you're military. It's part of the program. Now, again, I'm not about you not paying your bills, but I am about you having hope. I am about you winning. So develop a game plan. Begin to step by step by step, a little bit at a time. The tortoise wins the race every time I read the book. Walk your way out of this. You can do it with knowledge. Knowledge is power in this culture. Take this lesson and share it with somebody. Somebody that's hurting. A grandmother that's being collected from a bill she doesn't even owe. You've got to step in and take over that kind of situation and protect people from these people that are misbehaving. The good people have to rise up. When we do, we can put stuff like this down. So join with me in this crusade. Thanks for being here.